as always, that was Colin Gow with our officially licensed theme song podcast. So I am Steve Shoney. I am the city manager for the city of Upper Arlington. I am here with my sidekick.
I'm Darren Shulman. I'm the city attorney.
So we are on episode, I think, 45, 46, 47, something like that. Darren has still not booked a guest.
I have one guy who said he would and then he moved. That doesn't count as a booking. And then I have another one that said he'd do it, and we just got to schedule it.
I actually think I may have already booked him.
Oh, no. That was mine.
No, you got to move faster, dude. All right. We are here with a very special guest today. Mr. Frank Cass. Frank, welcome.
Thank you.
Frank is the owner, founder, whatever, for Continental Development.
Yeah. Continental Development. About 50 years ago.
About 50 years ago. Yeah. So Frank knows of the podcast, but he has not listened. So
he's actually smart, though, because he knows enough to know he should wear a sweater.
He's got a cardigan on.
And he knows we ask tough questions, so he had people do the work for him. Yes. That's smart.
So we start off every episode with something that we took from a sports podcast, but we've kind of modified it ourselves. And so, as you know, we asked you some introductory questions. And you said one of your favorite things is ice cream.
That would be my favorite thing.
So we are going to ask you the same question that we asked Jenny Britton when she came on the podcast.
Okay.
About ice cream.
We're going to give you
the same two we gave Jenny. So you got to pick one that it's going to be you're a huge sports fan. You're a huge OSU basketball fan in particular. When you got to start, when you got to have on your bench, and when you got to cut. Can't have it anymore. Done.
So one of these ice cream flavors is gone.
One you get to have whenever you want it. One is you're coming off the bench. Chocolate, vanilla, strawberry.
Well, Johnson's chocolate.
That's your number one?
It's my number one flavor.
Okay.
Johnson's triple bean vanilla.
It's your number two?
Be my number two.
And you're cutting strawberry.
I'm cutting the strawberry, but I love their strawberry, Johnson's strawberry. But I eat ice cream 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
Man after my own heart.
If I had known that, I would have had ice cream for you here today.
So you mentioned Johnson's in particular. Now, if I said Johnson's is off the table, would you eat a different brand, or are you loyal only to Johnson's?
Well, you know, you can't always get Johnson's. It's Columbus. But they're all over now in Columbus. They just opened in Grandview last night, I think. Are they in Upper Arlington?
No. I don't think so.
Not yet.
We've got Grater's.
Maybe I need to get them at Gateway.
As I was saying, you of all people can make this happen.
Yeah. So
that would be a big locate. That would be a big
And I don't
spot.
I don't pay for my ice cream.
Oh.
Because so many people know that I love Johnson's ice cream that just last fall, I got two $200 gift certificates to Johnson's. I restocked the other day with two half gallons, one triple bean vanilla and one chocolate, and then two pints of strawberry.
I have this vision of you having like a big walk-in freezer that's just stocked with walls and walls of Johnson's, or do you keep it small?
At one point, I had a broker friend dropped off 6 pints of Jenny's. My insurance guy dropped off 12 pints of Grater's, and I had 2 half gallons and 9 pints of Johnson's all in one freezer box.
Yes. And that lasted 3 days, so you know.
No, I have ice cream socials with the people in my building.
All right, so...
enough of ice cream.
No. We're going deep on this.
I'm
Jenny's.
Envious.
Okay, Jenny's, Johnson's, Grater's.
Johnson's.
Johnson's is your starter.
Yeah.
Okay, Jenny's or Grater's?
Grater's.
Wow. Oh yeah, for sure.
I know Jenny's is a favorite here, and Jenny is a favorite.
Yeah.
Okay, in Columbus, and she's great. I like ice cream.
You don't like the crazy stuff.
Well, and
you're a traditionalist in your ice cream.
And I like a scoop that's a scoop,
uh-huh.
That's affordable.
Okay.
So I can get one scoop of Johnson's that I like versus fancy ice cream that's half the size, twice the price, and it has tastes that I'm, you know, I'm, The other night I ate at some fancy place Saturday night and they had a chocolate mousse with rhubarb in it.
Uh-huh. Not your thing.
Not my thing.
Okay.
So before Steve gets into the not your thing, start bench cut. I'm gonna bridge it. Are you pro or con cookie dough? Because it's a little weird, but it's become mainstream.
I eat cookie dough. I can eat cookie dough. I mean, I can eat what's that other one like that cookies and cream or something like that. I mean, it's hard for me to find an ice cream I don't like.
Okay, well, this is a perfect transition.
So when we had Jenny on, we gave her a second start bench cut.
And we were trying to find things that for sure she would not like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we,
that'd be hard.
So we said kale, asparagus, and mushroom.
Ice cream.
Ice cream.
I wouldn't eat any of the three.
All in the trash.
All of it goes in the trash. So I have forgotten, and I keep forgetting to do this. I've been introduced. I introduced Darren. I introduced our guest.
Sound effects.
Frank's giving us the sound effects with his ice drink over here.
ASMR.
And I keep forgetting to introduce Maggie Roshan. Maggie Rock on Roshan, who is our producer, who occasionally chimes in as well. So we know you're obsessed with ice cream now. I did not understand how deep this obsession was. I can't decide whether I'm somewhat disturbed by it or intrigued, but we'll move on.
I'm intrigued. I'm going to vote for intrigued.
So you have been in the development business for how long?
50 years.
What did you do before you got into the development business then? Because then I know how old you are because you just brought us very fun little hats from your 80th birthday party. So I didn't really, so there's 9-10 years in there prior to getting into development that I don't think I know about.
So I started Ohio State in 1961 it was $110 a quarter, except the first quarter that you had to put a deposit down for your ROTC uniform.
Okay.
Anybody that graduated in the state of Ohio high school could go into Ohio State automatically, land-grant college.
Yep.
4 years later, I graduated on a Saturday, and 3 days later, I had a draft notice to go take my physical at Fort Hays with a bunch of guys that graduated here from Upper Arlington and were at Ohio State with me, friends, and I'm standing in line in the Fort Hays physical line, and the guy next to me says, "I wish I stayed in grad school." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Well, you don't have to get drafted if you're in grad school." So I left the line and drove back to Hagerty Hall, which was the business school where I'd worked for 4 years during college, which college was free for me because of that, and signed up for grad school, worked during the day at a family office supply business, Continental Office Supply, that we turned into an office furniture business along with the partner named Jack Lux, who's still there with me, built that business. And then moved from the East End up to North, and they built that building, and I liked the process. We moved in 1973, and we had office furniture customers, and the outer belt was done, and people were moving into office buildings, and we were furnishing them, and I thought that my education at Hagerty Hall, the business school at the time, was in finance and real estate, and I said, if they can build this building, I can build that building. And we started building buildings.
Do you still have any connection to the furniture roots? Do you still do anything?
I sold the office supply business 30 years ago when the Office Depots and Staples and Office Maxes were aggregating companies like ours. I kept the office furniture business and sold it 18 or 19 years ago, half of it, and then 4 years ago, the other half. So don't have any anymore, but it's a really good business, and was started by my father in 1940. It was little.
Yeah.
He had just come over from Czechoslovakia, escaping the war.
Very cool.
But he died in 1950-51 at a New Year's Eve party of a heart attack.
Oh my gosh.
My mother sold the business, then half of it, to a salesman that was working for my dad, who I ended up marrying his daughter.
Yeah. Well, so that part worked out okay.
So far it has.
Yeah. For Frank, it's worked out okay.
Maybe not for her. Is that what you're saying?
You'll have to interview my wife on another occasion.
Steve's just dropping some slick digs here.
Yeah. So what was your first big project?
Well, business was so different then.
Yeah.
Steve, for you, you know, you were in development before this, and which is why you've done such a great job here. But back then it was pretty easy. I live at in Bexley at Cassidy in Maine, mm-hmm. across from the library. Two blocks away from that is Montrose Elementary School, where I started kindergarten in 1948. John B. McCoy was in my kindergarten class.
Okay.
His family had City National Bank, which became Bank One, mm-hmm. which today is part of Chase. John came back to town after going to Williams and Stanford Business School, worked at Citicorp for a while, came back at Bank One, and ran into him at an evening Bexley basketball league, and he said, "I'm back, come see me," and so we did. And my first six buildings, not big, were build-to-suit for tenants that I knew through my office furniture and supply business. Knew they were growing and moving. And the first six buildings, he introduced me to a lender, commercial lender, not a real estate lender. Okay. There wasn't things like real estate lenders in 1970s, you know, that just doing real estate. At the banks, and my first six deals had no mortgages.
Really?
There was an instrument called a Cognovan note. I don't even think they had. Here's a young attorney.
Okay. I've never heard of that before. Yeah. I admit that.
Well, you'll look it up later, Darren,
I will,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So a Cognovan note's pretty simple. They lend you the money, and you promise to pay it back, and they can have it whenever they want. So you have to trust them, and they have to trust you, and that's how we built the first few buildings.
So it's basically an on-demand call.
It's an on-demand call. He pulled the note, he pulled it out of his drawer in his desk and said, "Here." And by the second building, I came to see him, and he pulled out like four or five of them and said, "Just put what you want on and have you and Jack and Ernie sign it and send them back." So through that, we then put a couple of those buildings in the permanent mortgage with Nationwide Insurance, and I met the guy that ran mortgages for Nationwide. And in 1979, I had the opportunity to, I built a couple buildings at what was Brooks Edge Corporate Center in Westerville.
Okay.
And the people that owned Brooks Edge Corporate Center was partly what became Capital Square, mm-hmm. was Ohio Equities, the Wolf family. And a company out of Tennessee called Cook United that got bad in a grain deal with Russia and needed to sell the asset. And so I didn't have any money, so to speak, and they wanted to sell the rest of the land in Westerville. So I went to Nationwide, and I did my first joint venture with Nationwide, and we bought all the land at Brooks Edge Corporate Center and developed it with Nationwide from 1979 through 2006.
Okay. Wow.
That was my first kind of big deal.
And is Brooks Edge where Chase has got their big...
Yes, that but there was a very little insurance company located at Cook, Henderson, and High. Cook and Henderson in that corner. The building's still there. We actually owned it for a while, a couple years ago. And there was an insurance company there called Educators and Executives, meant to insure teachers and executives. And they grew, and they built the headquarters building out at Brooks Edge.
Okay.
They sold the JCPenney Insurance, another business not in existence. And when they went out of business, Chase moved in there.
Okay.
Chase had built their headquarters, the McCoy Center, around the corner from that off of Cleveland Avenue.
Yep.
But then we bought all the rest of the land and built all the rest of the buildings out there. So that would be my start in... Larger scale stuff. And then I got into retail in the late 70s. In YPO, I met a pretty smart man named Bob Walter,
mm-hmm.
And he had a company called Cardinal Foods.
that is it's grown into something that is a little beyond foods.
It's not food at all anymore.
For our listeners who don't know, that's Cardinal Health.
It's the same Cardinal?
Yeah.
So
talk about a pivot.
Yeah, so it was Cardinal Foods. And they wanted to open, we hadn't done retail, and they wanted to open small, large grocery stores in small towns. Back then, a large grocery store in a small town would have been 30,000 square feet, you know, as opposed to that town that would have a 10,000-foot IGA in it or something. So we went out and did 8 of them around Ohio, a couple in West Virginia. And that's how we got started doing retail. One of those stores was in Zanesville, and Bob met a guy in Zanesville that owned a drug company called Bailey Drugs, wholesale drug company, and he bought Bailey Drugs. And then he started buying a few drug companies, and then at one point they had about the same volume in drugs and in food, and he sold his food business to a cooperative out of, I think, Wisconsin called Roundy's. Mm-hmm. And built Cardinal, he called it Cardinal Distribution at that time, into Cardinal Health. So that's how I got into the retail business. And then when he didn't have the food anymore, then I started doing Big Bears.
Okay.
And then in the late 80s, you couldn't borrow money to do anything, and I couldn't borrow money from anybody but Bank One. And they lend me money to build apartments in 88. That's all you could borrow for. The RTC, the savings mm-hmm. and loans were crashing. You just figure it out, you know. And so we started doing apartments, and we've done apartments ever since.
So with how you've seen things evolve over the years, do you think if you're a young entrepreneur starting out and you're starting out in the real estate business, and it sounds like a lot of what you were able to do in those the evolutions you were able to make were because you had done really well on your first few projects, and those relationships allowed you to evolve from one thing to another as the economy evolved. Do you think somebody could still do that today, or do you think things are so specialized that it's harder for people to evolve today?
Well, I mean, everything's harder because the scale is bigger.
Okay.
Gateway is $125 million.
So that's the Upper Arlington Gateway project at Lane and North Star. That
we did with you.
Yeah.
$125 million. There's not a lot of people that can, you know, come up to the table and do that.
Right.
The possibility still exists for people to start. It just depends on how you start. And, you know, I do a class once a year, two classes actually, once a year for the real estate department at Ohio State, and the new nice facility there, you know, and yeah. They have 45 kids in each class and sitting there, and half of them come up afterwards and, you know, whatever, want to know, hey, how do you do this? Today, the way you start, if you want to do that, if you want to start in a business, you should start as a broker. Mm-hmm. So you can feel the transaction and understand the numbers involved and the psyche of the people selling and buying and how to do it. Obviously, it helps to have some little bit of accounting and finance background and stuff like that, but you need to start by being exposed to the transactions.
Yeah.
And so that will be how to do it. But it's everything is more difficult today because everything has belts and suspenders, you know. Today, when you borrow from the bank, you pay your attorney and you pay the bank's attorney.
Yeah.
And you pay the title insurance and all of which is pretty daunting
yes.
for people that haven't done it before.
We need to bring back the what was it called, the
Cognovan note. I know you're going to look it up.
Look it up. We're going to bring. Yeah. We need to do one before we leave, Steve. We're going to issue a Cognovan note.
You know what? If we issue a Cognovan note, we will be leaving shortly thereafter. I can tell you that would be a career limiting move on our part.
It's a $10 Cognovan.
The city of Upper Arlington.
No. I think you want to be on the receiving end of the note, not the giving end of the note.
Get
you
one.
Might be.
Yeah.
You might be safe. life.
Yeah. Again, depending on who you're receiving the cognitive note from, yeah. It may be a career limiting move. You have to. Occasionally, we run into this thing on this podcast where I'm giving the city attorney legal and ethical advice, yeah. Which always troubles me.
Is that when you hope not too many people are listening?
Well, we know not too many people.
We think it's about 10. That includes Darren's dad.
Your wife kind of listens.
My wife. Although it was interesting, we had something on. So Greg Davies came on for our last episode.
Yeah.
We were reminiscing about my time at the City of Columbus and Greg's time at the City of Columbus. And Greg's doing great things down at Columbus Downtown Inc. I think that's what they renamed.
That's the new name?
Yeah, that's the new name. If I can remember, it's easy to remember.
I was on the board when it was Capital South 30 years ago.
Yeah, with Cleve, right? Was that Cleve?
Cleve Rutsecker,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. So we were talking about how I had to have a difficult conversation with a developer when we were working on the Market Tower.
Who was nameless in that?
Who was nameless, although I did at one point drop his first name. His first name was Mike.
Shocking.
And on my way down to South Carolina for spring break, I get a text from a number that I haven't gotten a text from for many, many years, probably 5 years, saying, hey, this is Mike. Thanks for the name drop on the podcast. So we get more listeners than we think.
There's a high percentage of people who go to the Up Arlington Library who listen to our show. Every time I go there, I get stopped by somebody. Yeah. So thank you, library.
Greg did make it sound a little bit like I could be somewhat contentious in negotiations.
Do you have any good Steve stories?
Frank, is it possible? Is this really true?
We did not get along when he was the city development director.
I have heard this, and like the way I observed the like Gateway Project in Kingsdale, I'm like, oh, they're like buddies. But
I'll tell you what, from my perspective, Steve, in his present position, is in the right position for him. You know, the council has given him the go ahead to do what he needs to do to envision and execute what has to happen with the city.
We do not pay our guests, I promise.
Yeah, with the city of Columbus, you had a lot of political input from a lot of places, and you also had staff that was less than competent in a lot of places and that also had their own agendas. It was a little different story. We had one particular project that we wanted to do. We never did do it, and the mayor wanted us to do it. That when we were buying that AAA thing, on balance, Greg's better off where he is too.
Yeah.
Because you have some autonomy doing what he's doing, and in his particular instance, he has Amy Taylor.
Yeah.
Who's an unbelievable. Number two person operative, been there before he was, knows everybody and doing a really, really good job. But the scope of what you have to do when you're looking at the city of Columbus, it's daunting compared to that because of politics and everything else. Did you see the new zoning thing they just brought out this week?
Yeah, I saw that, you know, they're planning to redo the zoning, which should be a big help. I mean, part of the challenge with the city of Columbus is the rules are so old that everything is done as an exception to the rules because the rules just don't make sense anymore because they were designed for when you were
right.
The last time they were redesigned was when you were starting out, basically.
Right.
And they probably worked really smoothly for about 20 years, and then they stopped working. And
well, in part, as cities become more liberal, mm-hmm. Elected officials prefer not to vote until everybody is until there's a consensus.
Yeah.
So then they send up neighborhood groups. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then the neighborhood groups get sensitive to the neighbors. And it just exacerbates a process that shouldn't be exacerbated, and it chases developers away. And when you're in a growth area like Greater Columbus, the developer will say, "What the hell am I doing here in Clintonville? You know, I'm heading to the suburbs,
right?
Any suburb but Worthington."
Yeah,
you know, and it's harder to deal with in Columbus.
This is not self-serving, but is Upper Arlington on the scale of easy places to work with, or are we more difficult? And you can answer honestly. I'm just curious.
I'll give you the most honest answer I can give you. The only things I've ever done here are the two projects that have been done since Stephen, you guys have been here, and it's been the most smooth sailing stuff I've ever done. You know, I stopped doing stuff in Dublin years ago. I build stuff in Dublin. We built the first phase of Bridge Park mm-hmm. for Crawford Hoying. You know, what did it take? A year, and I'm in. You know, we're building things. I mean, you know.
Well, and part of what's worked for us, and I'll give a ton of credit to our planning staff, is, you know, the planning for Kingsdale was done 20 years ago. It's been on the books for 20 years that Kingsdale was designed to be a medium density redevelopment when it got redeveloped. Similarly with Gateway. Gateway was annexed into the city with that being fundamentally part of the vision. So, and this is, you know, what we're doing now on Henderson is looking at it well in advance of when we think we're going to actually see projects so that we can have an honest conversation with the community and developers before you're in the heat of making a decision about a specific proposal. And to me, that's been the secret sauce, because, you know, that gives folks who are investing in the community a fair amount of knowledge that, hey, if you really want to get into it, this is what can be done in these locations. We can say with complete clarity to the community, this has been on the books for 20 years that you could have this level of density in a certain place. And that makes a huge difference.
Yes. And the other thing you did, just in retrospect, because I think some of that on Gateway was done before you got here.
Yeah.
You knew what you wanted there. You knew that Ohio State that owned, you know, I had 3 acres and they had 240. You knew they were going to build big, which they have.
Yeah.
And so it's not that you didn't listen to the neighbors, but you explained to the neighbors that whereas, yes, this is a big building, you know, 200, 300 yards away from them, this is part of what's being done on the West Campus. And for the greater good, this is a huge benefit for our city.
Yeah.
You know, I just went through a similar situation in Bexley on about $80 million project,
yeah.
Big for Bexley, 3 times bigger than anything they've ever done. And it's 232 apartments, it's some office space and a few restaurants and a parking deck
yeah.
That the schools cooperated in on a TIF. The exact next door neighbors, okay, 50 of them, came to every meeting and yelled and screamed and said the same things, you know, but the city was undaunted
mm-hmm.
Because the building they're sitting in 50 years before that, for 50 years, okay, till 2010 when it opened, or 9, that was a 5,000 square foot funeral home, you know, and now it's 32 high-end condominiums and office building and restaurants and parking, and yet right next to them, they're complaining about what was always planned to be, you know, cohesive with that.
Yeah.
And so part of it is council willing to stand, and planning and planners willing to stand up to the process for the greater good of what is being built.
Can you talk a little bit about what's going on with Gateway? I mean, it's a cool building, but like people might not have gone there. What's there? What's going to be in it? You know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So I'm a couple days away from leasing the last that I can lease 5,000 feet, at which point we'll have 131,000 feet of office leased out of 134. The last 3,000 we have to save for Northwest Mutual Expansion. That's our biggest biggest tenant. The apartments opened 4 months ago, and we've been leasing one a day, more than that. David Royer, an Upper Arlington resident that's our CFO, sent me yesterday a text that we're 139 leased out of 230.
Okay.
Half Price Books has moved in. I don't know if anybody's gone to see it yet.
I got to see it back. I love that store. It's
really nice, and it's nothing like the old store that you had to wind around. It looked kind of tired. It's nice, and we have a few other tenants there. We had a setback on the restaurant that we thought, you know, we sent them a lease after 8 months of negotiating, and they just decided to stop their growth, and that was this deep dish pizza Italian place from Chicago called Lou Malinati's. But we have several people looking at it now. Hopefully, I've got Rick Duty and Joe Ciccone. Joe owns Hyde Park, and Rick Duty was Bravo Brio, and they have this new concept they've done a couple of called, I think, JoJo's Italian Steakhouse or something. And they're supposed to come in this week. I texted him this morning to see if he's coming in tomorrow, but I haven't heard yet. And we have a few other people looking, and so we have to finish up the retail. We have a really cool little French patisserie going in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and called Paris Baguette. Sounds pretty fancy, Steve. I don't know if they'll...
They won't let Steve in.
Maggie can get in. I don't know if they're going to let guys with red cardigans.
Just get out.
Yeah.
Get out.
He does have a beret.
Yeah,
we're not going there. We're not going there.
So we got them. But here's the thing about that I was going to say, Steve. You mentioned that you annexed that from Columbus.
Yeah.
You never annexed the last little corner of it on North North Star. That was still in Clinton Township.
Right.
So we annexed that into Upper Arlington.
Yes.
At the time you annexed it, there were a whole bunch of little users there and no kids in the schools. So that nobody managed to switch school districts, which wouldn't have mattered.
Right.
It turned out to be the benefit of this deal because we ended up doing a pilot payment with the Columbus Public Schools.
Yeah.
They were great. The treasurer was great. And that pilot payment allowed the city, not the schools here, the city to capture over $1 million in real estate taxes.
So for our listeners, one of the unique things about that site is that is actually City of Columbus schools. That's not UA City Schools. So
City of Columbus schools, yeah. And they were getting $112,000 a year in taxes from the Pizza Hut, the little strip center, the Darren's Furniture. Yeah. We gave them $450,000. Real estate tax estimates are above 1.5.
Yeah.
So over $1 million coming in. And then we did an estimate on what the payroll would be in the building between the two taxes, the payroll tax and the real estate tax, that was going to pay for the garage. Well, as it turned out, this was what I was going to tell you, may as well say it. I mean,
breaking news.
Yeah, we have airmailed
the
income tax estimates in terms of the users that we have there between Northwest Mutual and Assured Partners. And mixed talent, and even the First Merchants Bank, and then a local insurance company as well, a local insurance agency. We're probably 30% higher than the estimated income tax was going to be.
We like to hear that.
Yeah,
and I think for people who don't like follow government nerdy stuff like us, the city. Is basically all of our operations pretty much are funded by income tax. So when we do a cool big project like Gateway and we hear this good news, it allows us to provide more services for our residents. So this is good news.
Yeah, and you know, again, I'm not going to be around, and you guys may look pretty young, but the tax increment financing will be paid off one day, and then the amount of money coming in to the city will be astronomical. That's why we do those kind of things. That's why cities do. So I guess the process here, in part, Your predecessor, Janine, was very knowledgeable. We're actually working with her. She's at the county.
Yeah.
And we're working with her on the Bexley project on some stuff right now. Steve, of course, had great expertise in how to get the stuff done, and so we got it done. And your planning staff was good, and it worked. And Jackie was great.
Yeah.
And Jackie worked with the neighbors on both of these projects to minimize negative feedback.
Well, and I think one of the things that I feel really lucky to have here is the neighbors who are here. You'll get, occasionally there'll be some people who are just, no. I say all the time, there's 5% of people who hate everything, right? But one thing that we have is we do have a community that is very engaged and very educated. And so if you sit down with them and say, here's the set of choices, here's what we have the power to influence, here's what we don't have the power to influence, here's what it costs to accomplish what you want, here's what it costs to accomplish this thing that approximates that. 95% of the folks here really want to have that conversation. And so it's not, for me, it's not a matter of, we want to kind of push this project through. It's like, okay, we need to sit down, have the conversation, and talk about what's the right project that can get done. And part of the reason I love this job is it is a community where folks do want to sit down and have those conversations. And we make, what I find and I see time after time is when we do that, projects get better. If you have a really good community engagement process, your projects get better.
Yeah, you both were talking, joking, but when we first started, I think, I don't think we were on the air at the time, about a guest you want to have on, Kip Greenhill.
Yeah.
You cannot really understand, unless you've been here a while, the importance of when he got onto council and was president of council and led a lot of the things going on. He was responsible for changing the nature of council and how they looked at things and the constituency of council to be more pro-development and to listen but not to listen too much, he was very, very instrumental. Brandon King, is Brandon still on council?
Brandon cycled off at the end of December.
Yeah. This is his first year off.
Yeah, but he was very good as well, just in terms of looking at the greater good and what you want to do with the city. I mean, one of the exciting things, we just did one building there at Gateway, but as you get off the freeway today to drive into Upper Arlington, you see all that stuff going on, that OSU's doing. And whereas you all know what's Upper Arlington and what isn't, for the most part, people are saying, hey, this is a place I maybe want to live, go to school and live here because look at all these jobs, you've taken advantage of that, and had we not been able to do this project, had the Columbus Public Schools not cooperated with it, but everything fell into place. Now, I would also say all that was pre-COVID.
Yeah, right.
We leased that office building during COVID. Both of the leasing people on that project at my old Continental Realty that are now at Newmark are Upper Arlington residents, Corey Cooperman and Wayne Hare. They did a great job, but the location, at the big footprint, 27,000-foot footprint, made all that work. And, I always say this, it's better to be lucky than smart, First Merchants is an aggregate of a bunch of banks they bought in Northwest Columbus, starting with the Upper Arlington Bank. Mixed Talent is a employment group, headhunters, whatever they're called. They specialize in biomed genetics.
It's a good location for them.
The previous to Ohio State and Children's opening that facility next to them, everyone they've placed was either East Coast or West Coast.
Really?
They had no presence in Columbus other than that's where they were. Okay, so, you know, the Assured Partners aggregating a bunch of insurance companies. And that was a deal that I made with Bill Sullivan, who our Builders Risk, Josh Corner's company, another Upper Arlington resident, yeah. And Continental Real Estate, Continental Development has the different properties. Our insurances, we're big and they need a lot of insurance. And so I said, hey, you guys want our insurance? Come to the building. Rented a floor of the building. You know, First Merchants is one of our banks. We try to work with middle-sized banks today. There is no working for us with the Chases of the world. They're too difficult,
yeah.
You know. So part of it is just being lucky, getting the right mixes put together that get these transactions done. You know, we're leasing, we don't have a leasing office yet, and we're leasing it Kingsdale.
At the apartments on Kingsdale.
Yeah, we're calling them, I think, the Kingston or something, Kingston.
Breaking news.
Dun, dun, dun.
So we've talked a lot about business, and you said you're 80, you're still incredibly active. I was over at Pickle and Chill on Sunday subbing in a league over there, and
yeah.
Who do I see sitting watching the women's final, the women's championship game sitting there but you, and
yeah.
We didn't play together, but we played on courts next to each other last week. So outside of still being really involved in the business, kind of what are the passion things for you?
Staying active,
yeah.
is most important. So best thing I can, so I'm 80, I'll be 81 this summer. So my Sunday, okay, meet friends in the morning at Kitty's at 10 o'clock for coffee. Have two friends that we have lunch every 2-3 weeks, junk food, although I upped the thing this week and I said, you guys have got to see the new menu at City Barbecue.
Okay.
And so we went to City Barbecue for lunch. 2 o'clock bike ride with my wife, and 4 o'clock pickleball with three other guys. That's Sunday. Okay.
Holy smokes. You're more active than I am.
Well,
that's not hard, I guess. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, but you've got how old Parker now?
Yeah,
you got
5-year-old.
Yeah, that's active.
So A, it's doing stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Like Saturday was a reading day. So I finished the book I was reading, about 150 pages, went for a walk with my wife, but that was a quiet day, and then went out to dinner with someone who I mentioned to you was played pickleball with us, and then went to the Cleveland Clinic. As we speak, he's having an aortic valve replaced. Always doing stuff, but I don't start my day till 10, and I'm usually done by 5. And 3 days a week, no matter where I am, every other day I work out and weight workout. I've done it since I was 14 years old. I watch what I eat, except for ice cream.
Yeah,
I was gonna say.
But I take statins since I was 43 years old.
Okay.
So it's Roto-Rooter. My cholesterol's 100, which is where my doc wants it. And so everything for me is friends and family. So I'm social. On an interpersonal basis. So, you know, granddaughter still at the academy, the other three here in Columbus are older. So there are two in college, one already out. So the one in college, every couple Sundays comes up, we have breakfast together on Sunday. One of them's a freshman at Miami of Florida.
Okay.
And he goes to school a little bit. And he fishes and makes fishing videos every day, and he's got jillions. One of his fishing videos had 3.4 million viewers.
Can he mention our podcast on his fishing video?
Yeah, he can.
Well, TBD, to be determined, TBD Leo Cass fishing, okay? Unbelievable. And so he wants to make a living doing that. So I'll see him. I texted him because we're going to Florida on Thursday. Actually, we're going to New York to see my newest grandchild, who's 3 weeks old, Felix. somebody says a family name, no. So,
sounds like it should be.
Yeah, but my daughter came up with Felix, which is fine. He's cute. And then down to Florida, so I'll see Leo over the weekend. He'll come up, and I think his girlfriend's coming down. And then another grandson that I'm in touch with all the time, but he's in Stockholm. Wow. So I call him one day, and he says he's with friends taking a train from Lisbon to some castle in Portugal. Tough life. He's a junior at Vanderbilt.
Okay.
And my oldest granddaughter is with PwC, and I see and talk to all of them all the time. And then I have a nine-year-old. She's a dancer, lives in Dallas. My son is with PNC there in human resources. So and then Alex has a little baby. She lives in Brooklyn. So and then I grew up here 80 years ago, right? Started kindergarten at Montrose, two blocks from my house. I got a jillion friends from there and from business primarily. Just, you know, grew up as a single child with a mother, you know, back in the day when you'd ride your bike home from Maryland Avenue School in second grade by yourself and let yourself into the house. So things were different.
Right.
End up knowing a lot of people. The only thing my mother ever said, just do the right thing. You know, and so the reason we do business, and I tell you, every single day I get on the internet an email from some company that wants to help me get more customers. And I try to explain to them, we try to do, and I write them back, many of them, but they don't stop, and then I stop writing, that I don't need more customers. I do three or four deals a year to start, and they come to us primarily. I mean, this one didn't come to us at Kingsdale, other than we were one of three or four people that knew about it, and we had two advantages. You know, we had a relationship with Chase, because that whole site, I don't know if you knew this or not, but that site had a 50-foot easement.
No, I didn't know that.
Going from Northwest Boulevard to Tremont, no build. It was 1/6 of the site you couldn't build on.
What was it for?
Done in 1957.
Right. It was so that there were sight lines. It was to make sure that there were always sight lines
to see
from
the bank.
The road to see the Chase Bank branch there.
Yeah, which was City National when it was built, and it was the first drive-through ever in the banking business, they said. Okay. So we had that, and then I did Kingsdale in 2008 and 2009 and sold it to Echo, that's the Giant Eagle family ownership entity that I'm on the board of, and I called them up and got 150 parking places where we're about to start the garage.
It's underway,
yeah. So I had both ends of it, and then through those conversations, I got a relationship with the people from Southeastern, whatever. They were in Augusta. They were the they were the Kroger partner, we're not out looking for stuff because people keep sending things, and we can't do a lot of deals, you know. So so I have a lot of things going on. But I really probably work 25 hours a week. Now, when I'm gone, I work weekday, same thing. In the Hamptons, I go to the grungiest Y in Long Island every other day for, you know, 45, 50 minutes of weight work, ride bikes with my wife otherwise, you know, or walk downtown. So I keep doing what I'm doing wherever I am. I'm boring and routine, you know, but... I weigh myself every morning. If I'm 162, I eat more, and 165, I shut my mouth, except for ice cream.
We know each other well enough.
Yep.
I think I can say this. It takes a lot for you to shut your mouth.
It does.
I don't think he meant from talking. I think he meant from eating.
I meant from eating. Talking is hopeless.
I meant from talking.
I'm also a good listener.
You are a very good listener.
I hear what people say, and I take it in, and I remember it.
I still remember when I first took this job. There's a guy who does government relations at the at City Hall, John Kennedy. And I remember it was literally the first week on the job, I get a call from Kennedy. He's like, hey, Shoney, how you doing? You know, you know, Continental does a lot of projects in Arlington. Should I set up a meeting for you and Frank? I was like, oh, no, Frank and I will be fine. We'll be great. And we have been, and I appreciate
it. It's been great.
Because it's been, you know, it's easy to work together when you've got common shared interest and the interest align, and that's always been the case on our projects.
And competence.
Yes,
thank you. Your city's been great.
Thank
you.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate it. But it, you know, really, it boils down to, you know, if you can look at a project and see where the Venn diagrams overlap, right?
Yeah.
And you've got that shared interest, and you can find the place to quickly get into that shared interest spot, you're in good shape. So we always finish every podcast with two questions.
Before we do, guys,
Darren's got one more question.
Have you guys ever played each other at pickleball?
No, but we will now. I mean,
we will. Yeah,
I can call him. He can call me.
I want to know who wins. I got my money, Frank.
He looked a little better than me. I don't know.
No, see, Frank's got that former tennis player thing. Because you played. I know David played
a long time. Yeah.
Because Frank's son. Do you have any ownership interest, or is it just David that owns?
David owns Pickle and Chill 100%.
All right.
But we bought one of the original Major League Pickleball teams 2 years ago.
Okay.
Wait a minute. You own a Major League Pickleball team? We didn't even lead with that?
We did not lead with that. We should have let
gold.
Now, and my son, David, is probably one of the two or three most influential guys in the pickleball world, because he then facilitated the merger of Major League Pickleball, which is the four people, two men, two women on a team, with the PPA, which is the tournament play of individuals, and that's now merged. You were playing in a league the other day with a duper rating.
Yeah.
What's your duper rating?
3-3, something like that.
That's good.
Yeah.
So.
What is a duper rating? Like super play, duper, not
do
so
you
duper?
Play, do you play golf ever?
It's like a handicap.
Yeah, it's a handicap.
Okay.
And David, then we went out, David, basically, but we're all partners in it. We bought Duper.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, we bought Duper. And so.
So can you boost my score?
I can.
Can you go in there and adjust?
I can.
Take that little.
Do you want a high score or
you
want a low score?
Can you lower my taxes?
No.
I can still fix your Duper. Okay, so the way Duper is very simple. It's an it's an analog. I mean, somebody, after every game he played the other day during his 2 hours, he turns the score into somebody that enters every score, every day, every place. And the reason is, when Steve will go on vacation, wherever he'll go, okay, and there'll be pickleball courts. And just like with golf, it's even more important in pickleball,
okay,
that because you're playing against somebody. So in golf, if you have a 16 handicap, you can play with a 2 handicapper,
right,
and be fine.
Evens out.
But in pickleball, if you're a 2.5 and he's a 4.5 and you're out on the court, neither of you are going to have a good time.
Well, the guy who wins will have a great time.
No, you can't. It's just the game is so fast and so much stuff going on that if one party cannot keep up with what – and worse than keeping up, okay, if you don't play enough, you're standing in the wrong place all the time. And you can think to yourself, God, you know, I should have gotten that ball, you know, but you couldn't get it because your partner hit the ball too high across the net and, you know – you're dodging it, you know, trying to pick it up like this. So duper rating gets very, very important. So there's now 24.
Own the duper rating now?
My son's company owns it, of which my other son, myself, Joel Pizzuti, and Brett Kaufman.
Okay.
And Doug Ullman put it all together, so he has a little piece. So we own Duper, and we own a Major League Pickleball franchise.
So I just checked. I'm actually a 3-1. So I expect by the end of the week to be a 3-3. Asking.
But then you're going
to
get smoked by everybody.
No, that's true.
You want to be a 2 so you can just womp on everyone.
No, so I agree with most of what Frank said. I find it really depends on the attitude of the folks that you're going in and playing with. If you're going in and playing with folks who are anywhere from, like, within a point of you, like anywhere.
A 3 to a 4, you can play.
A 3 to a 4, 2-5 to a 3-5. You can play. So, like, my wife is, I think, like a 2-6, and I'm a 3-1 or something like that. And we have a great time playing together. But if she's playing with somebody who's a 4-0, it's just miserable for everybody. They're kind of...
So, yesterday, when you saw a Sunday, my partner was a 4-5-5.
Okay.
Okay. He did not play great. the two guys we were playing are 3-5s.
Okay.
I've never played in a duper thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'd be somewhere between a 3 and a 3-5, depending on the day. Now, today at noon, I take a lesson.
Okay.
That's why I have my stuff on.
Okay.
I'm a believer in 10,000 reps.
Mm-hmm.
So the important shot in pickleball is the third shot.
Third shot.
Okay.
And it's either a drop or a drive, depending on where you're standing. Okay. And so now there's other shots that are important. If you're serving to me, I have got to return your serve deep, because the deeper I return your serve, the closer I get into the net.
Okay.
But what happens is, if you watch 90% of the games out there, most people are not dropping, they're driving. Okay? And so you get to the better players. The best player in the world is a guy named Ben Johns. He's got a 7-2 or a 7-3 duper rating. We have the second best player. We just had the draft last week.
Draft?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got the second best player in the world on our team. I think his name is Newman. And we got that with the fourth pick, because the people picking second and third chose the top two women in the world. Because what you do is, in the MLP, two men play doubles against two men, two women play singles against two women, and then two mixed doubles. If it ends up 4-4, it's very interesting, then it's singles where each one of the four players plays 4 points against the team's other four players, and then you add up the points to move on in the tournament. Okay? Yeah. Pretty, you know. You were playing to 21.
Yeah.
We were just playing games to 11.
Yeah.
So in our hour, we played 5 games.
Yeah.
And I'm playing with the best of the four players, and we won 2 of the 5. We lost 3.
Yeah. I play Steve, and I have, like, I barely play pickleball, and I'm horrible.
Yeah.
And he just destroys me. Will his duper rating go up because he just ran up the score?
It's the opposite of that.
Oh, really?
If he plays with you.
Like, if I play against him and he crushes me.
Won't make any difference.
No. Won't help you. I was trying to boost up your score by just padding your stats.
You
like
have to have a duper rating to boost up his score.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm not going to help you. Sorry, Steve.
No.
Now, you could be his partner and drag him down. That would hurt.
Yes. We're going to enter a tournament. We're going to mess up your duper
rating.
So
even though you two dress alike, you ain't playing together.
You're not playing together. Never.
No. And one of the things I do like about playing pickleball is that, you know, I've played enough that the game does not go always to the most athletic person. It's the person who understands how to hit a shot that's going to make their opponent hit it to them in the right place. I played in one of the city tournaments last fall, and it was me and a guy by the name of Sean Kane, who's a chiropractor here in town, good friend. You know, we're both reasonably fit, and we just got completely smoked by these two women who were probably 67, 68. I mean, just completely crushed us.
Yeah.
Because we're out there trying to hit drives the whole time, and we're hitting. And they're like, no, we're just going to put the ball at your toe. I'm going to make you hit the ball off your toe.
And they knew where to stand. Yeah,
yep.
they knew where to stand,
and they're just going to hit the ball right at our toes every time.
So one of my best friends is a retired divorce attorney, Jeff Grossman.
Okay.
His wife, Anita, is really good.
Yeah.
All right. My wife, Linda, plays once in a while, and is going to have her second hip replaced shortly, but she's pretty good. So Jeff and I went out to play the two of them, okay? And they killed us. My wife's 70 and Anita is 77. Killed us, all right? I mean, 2 points, 11 to 2, 11 to 3, 11 to 1, okay? I don't lose well. So
shocking.
I'm discussing things with Jeff while we're playing about where he's standing and what he's, okay? So we're driving home, not together. They had their car. We're playing at my son's place, Pickle and Chill. And Linda says, boy, you were pretty tough on Jeff, okay? So I get home, and I text Jeff. I say, hey, buddy, sorry, you know, I'm tough on you today. He said, you and I'm going to pay for doubles lessons for us, okay? And we're going to go out and play the girls again. Yeah. He said, did Linda put you up to that? I said, yeah. So I said, you know, Dave, the pro there, is really good.
Yeah.
He's about a 6,
yeah.
Okay? So I signed us up. We had pickleball lessons, 3 of them, okay? And we played the girls again, and we split.
Okay. So okay? You're getting better.
Yeah. So Jeff, he's an attorney that was a divorce attorney. He must have some listening skills. I don't get it, because I kept saying to him he would serve or return a serve and take one big step into the court. And the next ball he would hit would be a backhand out of the air. Okay? Now, they'll tell you as you're playing, if you could manage to play the entire day and not hit a backhand except when you're at the net, you're better off. Mm-hmm. Unless you can actually know how to hit on top of the backhand and make it go, whatever. Okay? So he was just standing in the wrong place, hitting backhands, and I kept telling him. He kept saying, that's what David, because he had taken lessons from David, that's what David told me. I said, there's no way that David, that's what he told you to do. Okay? You know, but anyhow, so and then I get, lectures from my wife that this is supposed to be fun and this and that. And I said, just the chauvinist in me thinks that getting smeared three games in a row by two ladies is not that fun.
Here's the secret to life, though.
Right? Yeah, thank you. This will be good, Darren. This will be good.
I'm enjoying this so much.
Yeah.
Your wife had more fun than you did, so it's fine.
That's true.
So
just happy wife, happy life under that scenario.
Think about
I have thought about that.
Think about it not in terms of your pickleball partner, but your life partner. Did your life partner have a good time?
Yeah.
Then yes, you should have had a good time.
Which is fine. It's okay when you tell me that, but not when she tells me that.
Yeah, I think I'm on Frank's side
on
this one.
Yeah.
I think I
am.
I'm here for you.
Thanks, Steve. It's been great.
Would it be possible for like Steve and Darren to be signed to the Professional Pickleball League as kind of like comic relief?
We
would get that ratings. Funny.
We get rate. Well, when I play with you, we will be. I'm going to be in the wrong spot every time.
These guys are pros, and they can make a lot of money.
How much? I mean, they get sponsorship or something, or
they get sponsors. Everything. The one guy, Ben Johns, is number one in the world. There's 3 million rackets out there with his name on it.
Oh wow! This is a whole new world for me.
It's
the fastest growing sport in the history of sports. There's now 35 million people playing pickleball. Only 500,000 right now have a Duper rating. So, our job is to get every club in the country that are built. Like in Dallas, one guy is building 20 clubs.
Wow.
A billionaire.
And you got to get the Duper rating in there so you have this massive database.
Get the Duper rating.
And then if I go anywhere,
you got a Duper
rating. Duper rating.
So when you go down to Naples for 2 weeks, vacation or whatever it is, and you want to play pickleball, you sign up wherever you are, and they ask you what your Duper rating is, and they'll make games for you with people that are between 3 and 3.5 or whatever.
Will Duper be incorporated into our courts in Upper Arlington, Steve?
If you have tournaments.
When we do tournaments, we do that. But just like even for the kind of casual play stuff that we've got, that we do some casual play, drop and play on Sunday afternoons. The residents who volunteer to organize that pay a little bit of attention. They'll ask you what you're doing.
But they're not collecting the scores.
No, but it'll be 3 years from now, they will.
Yeah.
They will.
Sorry I went down that path.
That's fine.
We talked about real estate. I'm like, wait, pickleball?
One more shout-out I got to do to somebody at Pickle and Chill, which is, do you know Ruth Milligan?
Forever.
Yeah. So Ruth is responsible for me meeting my wife.
She is?
She is. So Holly and I did an internship through the governor's office back when we were between our junior and senior years in college. And this was when Ruth was working for, what was Mrs. Voinovich's name? Was it Hope Voinovich?
I know who you mean. Yeah, okay.
Anyway, she was working for Mrs. Voinovich and was responsible for coordinating this internship group. So every time we see her over there, it's great to see her and catch up with her. So I've known her for
She's a good pickleball player.
I've played pickleball with Ruth. She was very kind to me when we were playing pickleball together. She did not abuse me too much.
But she's pretty good.
She
did all of David's PR and all of the putting everything together. She's still involved to some degree. I don't know what. But yeah,
she used to run
TED Talks.
Yeah, TED Talks in Columbus.
Yeah,
really? All that stuff. Yeah, she's great.
Cool.
Well, listen, I know we've gone way over on time.
No, we have. All right.
And so thank you for coming on. Thank you for continuing to invest in the community. And I'll see you over at the Pickleball Board sometime.
Pickle and Chill.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, hey. So this, oh my gosh, Star Trek?
This is a family show. What are we doing?
We have, yeah, faces for radio, as they say.